celebrating aircraft home building and innovation. This is EAA Radio in Oshkosh, Wisconsin.
I'm Farid Guillot. In February, AOPA released its annual NAAL report, a summary of accidents, trends, and factors for general aviation. A portion of the report focused on amateur-built aircraft and showed an increase in accidents for the category. EAA Vice President of Industry and Regulatory Affairs, Earl Lawrence, says although there is a wide variance in the actual numbers, some amateur-built areas need attention.
The NAAL report is important to the entire aviation community because it is the standard, the accepted source for safety information for the aviation community. Not so much for the general public, but for the aviation community. It's very respected, it's consistent, and it's been out there for a long time. So we all look to the NAAL report for sources of information about the aircraft we're flying and how safe they are.
What statistics does the NAAL report examine, usually?
Typically, the NAAL report has focused on general aviation aircraft, and of course, general aviation has a very wide definition, but it has not, in the past, not gone into any real depth when it comes to experimental aircraft. It has focused more on the traditional type certified flight training, transportation, recreational activities, and you know, Cessnas and Pipers and those type of aircraft.
And we should mention that the NAAL report is published by AOPA's Safety Foundation, and that's where that particular report comes from. Is the methodology off, or are amateur-built aircraft indeed more unsafe? And is that outside of acceptable norms for amateur-built aircraft?
Methodology, I'm not going to say is off, because the methodology that one uses for looking at safety statistics can be looked at things in many different ways. And the methodology that is chosen, appears to be chosen in the NAAL report, is the typical one that we've used for the National Transportation Safety Board, and that is basing our statistics off of per 100,000 hours of flight time. And that's been a method that's been consistently used now for decades, and it has enabled us to have comparisons to see where trends are going up or trends going down. But what it doesn't do a good job of is giving us a real life experience of what does this really mean to us. For example, insurance companies, they don't use per 100,000 hours of flight as a analysis. They don't really care how many hours you've flown. They want to know whether they're going to have to pay on an accident in the next year, the length of the policy. And that's why, like, an RV6 and a 172 may be insured for exactly the same amount for a year, even though the 172 may show up on using the methodology using the NAAL report as a, quote, safer aircraft or an aircraft less likely to have an accident per 100,000 hours. And I always say, look at your insurance companies. If your insurance companies don't have any problem insuring experimental amateur-built aircraft, even though you see these different numbers out there, and mainly that's because we use them differently. We fly, I wouldn't say less, but not per person or per pilot, but the aircraft flies less. Why? It's not on the rental line. It's not being used for flight instruction. An experimental aircraft is actually safer per mile traveled than riding a motorcycle. I think that's what we would call socially acceptable. The level of safety may not be as good as a car, may not be as good as a type certified aircraft, depending on how you're looking at those numbers. But we do know that it's socially acceptable because it's an equivalent risk of, or better risk, than riding a motorcycle.
And when you do engage in building your own airplane, there's this acceptable amount of risk for the freedoms that you have of constructing your own airplane.
Oh, absolutely. And it's not just constructing your own airplane. When we look at all aircraft regulations and activities, we look at the knowledge of risk of the individual involved. And that's why it's so important that we do not have paid passengers, for example, in experimental aircraft. If you look at an airliner, well, the knowledge of risk of a ticket purchasing individual is very low. They don't know how that aircraft was maintained. They don't know how it was designed. They don't know who's flying it. They don't know any of those questions. And you must have a much higher, there's an expectation is I'm going to arrive at my destination safe and there's no problem. Then on the whole other end of the spectrum you look at it jumping out of a perfectly good airplane. Sorry, parachute skydivers out there. Can be a lot of fun. But the general public, from a social acceptability standpoint, look at that as, you know, that's a very dangerous activity. But do we outlaw it? No, we don't outlaw it. But there's that understanding. You have that level. The person participating understands it's a risky activity. They understand what they're doing. When you build your own airplane, you understand your airplane. You know who did the maintenance. You know who built it. It's your choice whether to fly that aircraft. And you don't have anybody paying you to fly on that aircraft. And so that's how it can become acceptable.
Looking at the numbers, some of the accident rates have doubled in some areas. Mechanical causes are up. But still, overwhelmingly, it is pilot error that is the majority of these accidents.
Yes. It's on the order of 58% of the accidents are what you would call pilot error. We see a lot more maneuvering accidents. What do I mean by maneuvering? Flying around a house, you're showing off your new aircraft to your friends or whatever it may be, and what are you doing? Well, you enter an accelerated stall because you lost sight of what the airspeed was as a new aircraft, and you're low to the ground. Well, that's a fatal accident because you don't have the altitude to recover, etc. And these are the type of environments that you see more of in recreational activities. It's just part of it. People are flying lower. They're doing things that are more fun. But that's also why we have to be extra careful there. We see controlled flight and terrain that has absolutely nothing to do with the weather. And also, we're not flying as much, and we're flying in a less controlled environment.
EAA Sport Aviation columnist Ron Wantaya has been analyzing these statistics for several years, and one of the assertions he made about, if we can go back to the methodology, not necessarily the NAAL report, but of the FAA and the NTSB, and the way each one of those agencies categorizes amateur-built aircraft, and he suggests that maybe that they're, since they're not categorized properly, the rates may be different than what they're reported.
Oh, absolutely. And what Ron is getting to when he looks at all that data is the various ways that you can count experimental aircraft and what's defined as a home build. It is amazing sometimes to look at the database and see what has been classified as a home build. It may not be a home build. It may be one of the two-place ultralights that were converted to ELSA. It may be a warbird. It may be an experimental exhibition aircraft that is categorized as a home build. We see a lot of those miscategorizing of aircraft during investigations. And you know, part of it is because there are so many different makes and models, and they're so unique, and that's what we love about it, but it also makes it hard to identify when their investigator is standing there and has some wreckage, and he needs to say what this thing is. And so a lot of the records, what we find too, haven't been identified yet. They're literally have blanks in them at the registration. And so what does that mean? And that was another anomaly we have found is, there may be as upward as 12,000 more home builds than what the records, you know, we say we have a little over 30,000 home builds. We just celebrated that a year or two. Wonderful thing. Well, there's a possibility there may be as many as 40,000 home builds out there. What we do is there's a survey that the FAA does, and they say, okay, the average home built flies X amount of hours a year. So let's say it's 60 hours a year. Well, if it's 60 times 30,000 versus 60 times 40,000, those are a whole lot of different hours per year and would completely change what our numbers are.
One of the other assertions that Mr. Wantaya also made was that first couple of flights is equal to the amount of risk of a whole year's worth of flying later down the road, say after they've flown off their test hours.
But way back in 1996, EAA really focused in on this. FAA was pointing out that 1 in 5 of all accidents that occurred in amateur-built aircraft occurred in the first 2 flights, not even the first 2 hours, the first 2 flights. And that caused us to create what we call the Flight Advisor Program. And really what the Flight Advisor Program is all about is getting you to really think and prepare for your first flight. So many of us are building for years and may not be flying that much. And it's just an opportunity to sit down with somebody who's been through this before and plan out and think about all the things that may happen. Plan out, you know, how are you going to fly your flight? What are you going to do on your first flight? What kind of qualifications do you want to bring yourself up? too. You may not be able to fly or get experience in that your same make and model, but there are ways to go rent airplanes and experience a lot of the same things and practice some of the same maneuvers that you're going to. So there's no, you're trying to reduce the surprises as you can. As I bring it up is, what's your first flight? Everybody has a first flight and they may not think about it. That was the time you soloed. Now think about when you soloed. You know that airport in and out. You knew exactly what speeds to fly, and then your flight instructor steps out, and wow, is that a different airplane. Boy, all of a sudden you launch off the ground, you're flying much faster than you ever were. That's a test flight, in a way, and that's the kind of things we want to get people to think and take advantage of things like the Flight Advisor Program. Now, you don't have to just use the EA Flight Advisor Program. There's great materials from a lot of the major kit manufacturers, and some of the major kit manufacturers provide training programs, and they'll even send out somebody to help you do your first flight, or actually to do your first flight. Those are personal decisions that an individual has to make on their own.
Anything else that we need to consider when we talk about these numbers?
Well, absolutely. I think there's two things that, in the summary, that we really need to make sure we're paying attention to, and that is recurrent training. And, you know, all of us don't fly for periods of time for one reason or another, but or we get used to flying around straight and level and we don't practice the basic maneuvers. Remember I said in this discussion about turns around a point, for example, when you're sightseeing. And, you know, maybe you've been just out flying for quite a long time doing traveling from point A to point B, and you haven't been in that, practice an accelerated stall type of maneuver. I'm not saying you have to stall it. Everybody has a different aircraft. But just go out and practice those maneuvers like you were when you were a student pilot. Get that recurrent training. Some airplanes need more recurrent training than others. What about crosswinds? When's the last time you've been in a heavy crosswind? So taking that responsibility of really making sure your skills are on top of your aircraft for your situation are very, very important. And maintenance, really pay attention to what we're doing and maintaining our aircraft and being vigilant on our pre-flights and looking for things that go wrong in our airplane. I mean, I know we all want to be, but it's certainly, those are two areas that we really have to highlight and make sure we're thinking about constantly.
Earl, thanks very much.
I appreciate it.
I'm Farid Guillot, EAA Radio.